morning, everyone. We are reading in Book 1, the Book of Beginnings, and Canto 2, The Issue. And we stopped in the middle of page 14. We've been reading about how Savitri now has reached a crucial moment in her life when, without other help, she has to stand against the cosmic law in order to fulfill her mission, which is to save the soul of humanity from the grip of death and ignorance. And Sri Aurobindo describes this as a kind of single combat. He's a champion in the lists, facing all the opposition, everything that wants to keep things the way they are. She, the world unknowing, for the world she stood. No helper had she, save the strength within. There was no witness of terrestrial eyes. The gods above and nature, soul below, were the spectators of that mighty strife. And then in a very beautiful passage, Sri Aurobindo described the environment in which she is, in the Shalva forests, in the foothills of the Himalayas, in the background, the high peaks. So he says that there, the mighty wildness of the primitive earth and the brooding multitude of patient trees and the musing sapphire leisure of the sky and the solemn weight of the slowly passing months had left in her deep room for thought and God. There was her drama's radiant prologue. And this prologue to her drama is, of course, the meeting with Satyavan in the forest. She has met him a year ago, and now that fateful year has passed, and she is facing the day when Satyavan must die. But Sri Aurobindo is telling us about how Savitri is the perfect shrine for the god of love. You can sit on the cushion. So we're on page 40, in the middle of the page. She's shutting it off. We'll start reading at line 116 on page 14. Yes, Don?
Maybe this question is one that I must know, but I really don't know it yet. Why must Satyavan die?
It is fate. It is destiny. And that, of course, is one of the things that she has come to change. Fate, destiny. She has come to change the need in the material universe for ignorance and suffering and death. So she is being, since that is her mission for which she has incarnated, she's being faced with this problem in a very, very personal way. The one she loves, when she declares her love, when she shares that news with her parents and with Narad, the semi-divine being who can see the past and the present and the future, when he's asked for his blessings, he's able to tell her that Satyavan is in every way the perfect mate for Savitri, except that, unfortunately, he is doomed to die 12 months from this day. So although this whole book, the action T, takes place on that one day when Satyavan must die. We have the big flashbacks, and part of those flashbacks we read in book 7, how Savitri united with Satyavan in the forest, and how she passes that year up to the day when Satyavan must die. But now we're right at the beginning. We're on that day. She's just waking up to that remembrance, and Sri Aurobindo is telling us that this place in the forest, this is where the radiant prologue to her Dharma was lived. That radiant prologue is described in book 5, the book of love, where we read about the meeting of Savitri and Satyavan.
So this fate is not that
Vishnu
is going to challenge now. That is not divine giving, that is worldly something.
It is something, it is, we could say, the universal conditions, combination of conditions are ruling the earth at present. For ourselves, we know that these bodies are material, physical bodies made of living matter, and that it's because this matter is not able to keep up with the forward movement of our inner evolution and the outer evolution that is to come on Earth. And that is why we can't do our whole mission in one lifetime. The body has to be discarded, and we have to carry over the essence of its experiences to other lives. But ideally, if the substance of our bodies and the general material substance would become more receptive to the subtler movements of evolving consciousness, then that might not be necessary. Developed beings might choose to leave a body, but it might not be essential. And Sri Aurobindo in a letter has told us that this story is supposed to have taken place a long, long time ago in the early stages of human history, when it was necessary to open up this possibility of achieving the immortal state in a mortal body. And Savitri has come to hew the waves of immortality. So I hope that answers your question, Don.
Yes.
Symbolically, we can say, as Sri Aurobindo has explained to us in the author's note, Satyavan represents the soul which descends into the material world, into the grip of death and ignorance. And this is, Savitri has been born to rescue the human soul from this necessity. Shall we start reading at the back today? Josephine? What? I'm looking at this back here. We'll read around the back. We are page 14, line 118, a spot. Yes.
A spot for the eternal's trail on earth, set in a cloistral yearning.
You can go to the back.
And watch by the aspiration of the peaks appear through the aureate opening in time, where stillness, listening, felt the unspoken word and the hours forgot to pass towards grief and change. Here, with the suddenness divine advents have, repeating the marvel of the first descent, changing to rapture, dull, earthly round, love came to her, hiding the shadow, death. Well might he find in her his perfect shrine. Since first the earth being's heavenward growth began, through all the long ordeal of the race, never a rarer creature bore his shaft, that burning test of the Godhead in our parts, a lightning from the heights on our abyss.
Thank you. I mentioned last week that these first two cantos of the poem are like a kind of overture to everything that is coming. And it's as if in these two cantos he is, Shobindo, the poet, is giving to us very concise evocations of things that are going to be elaborated further on. So here, the first sentence here, which Josephine read, there's a canto at the beginning of book five called The Destined Meeting Place. It's a very short canto, but it describes that beautiful spot, which is the destined meeting place, the spot which has been chosen for the Eternal's tread on earth. And it's set like a jewel in a setting in this forest, surrounded by the forest. And the forest, Shobindo says, its mood is like a cloistral yearning. A cloister is a monastery, particularly a monastery for women, but even a monastery for men has a cloister, an enclosed place, usually a gallery, an arcaded gallery around a garden, which is an enclosed and protected place that is meant to encourage deep aspiration and communion with the divine. So it's as if that place where Savitri will meet Satyavan is like that. It's set in this cloistral yearning, and those great Himalayan peaks are watching what will happen here, these important events. These peaks which are always aspiring towards the higher levels of consciousness. And there's a golden opening in time, a very special moment where stillness, listening, felt the unspoken word, and the hours forgot to pass towards grief and change. So it is here in this special place and moment that with the suddenness divine advents have, when some divine revelation or power comes to you, it comes suddenly. When it comes for Savitri, this marvel, it repeats this advent of the God of love, repeats the marvel of the first descent, when the divine first came and inhabited the material earth. And this advent changes to rapture the dull earthly round, all the ordinariness of earth life. Love came to her. So the effect of love is to repeat the marvel of the first event descent and to change the dull earthly round to rapture. But in Savitri's case, when love comes to her, he's hiding the shadow, death. And then Shobindo says, well might he find in her his perfect shrine. This he, love finds in Savitri the perfect shrine, the perfect dwelling place. And the next sentence describes how that is. Since first the earth being's heavenward growth began through all the long ordeal of the race, never a rarer creature bore his shaft, that burning test of the Godhead in our part. Since the very beginning of human history, or even evolutionary history, since first the earth being's heavenward growth, this movement upwards towards the fulfillment, through all the long ordeal, the testing and the suffering, the growth of the human race, never a rarer creature, nobody so fine and developed, bore his shaft, the arrow of love. Yeah? Love comes to us and shoots his arrow, and when he touches us, then we fall in love. And Sri Aurobindo says, that arrow, the arrow of love, when it touches us, that's a burning test of the divinity in our parts, our inner divinity, our soul. How will our soul respond? Or how will the divinity in our whole nature respond to that burning test? He says it's a lightning, the arrow of love. It's a lightning coming from the heights on our abyss, here where we are in this so far undeveloped material world. And Lorraine, Audrey, you would read, yeah? Let's pause there. We'll pause there. So all in her, everything in Savitri indicates a higher species, a more noble species than our present humanity. And now step by step he's going to examine all the parts of Savitri's being, starting with her spirit and then her will and her mind. Is it clear? Shall we go on? No, start in the previous line.
As in a mystic and dynamic dance, the priestess of immaculate ecstasies, inspired and ruled from truth's revealing bowl, moves in some prophet cavern of the gods, a hum of silence in the hands of joy, inhabited with rich creative celestial sense, even in earth stuff, and their intense delight for the supernal beauty on man's lives.
Thank you. So after the spirit and the will and the mind, he describes her heart and her body. It's a very, very extraordinary passage. Anybody has anything they want to ask about this? Two sentences.
In previous lines, one thirty-eight.
Yes.
Thought is that is capital T. So it is a stress.
He's speaking about her spirit, which our spirit normally is confined to the ways of thought, but her spirit is able to fly like a powerful bird, much higher than the realm of thought. And it travels, he says, through worlds of splendor and of calm towards unborn things, immortal things, things that, or things that have not yet been manifested. Yes. Yes, pure sincerity. And it's also passionate in flow. There's an intensity in that sincerity, no? But it has not one turbid wave, no troubled, muddy, disturbed wave. It's absolutely pure and clear. Yes, you see, this is really a very, very interesting image that he's giving us here. It's the image of an oracle, a cave where there's a priestess who conveys messages from above. Yeah, but usually that is done through the medium of words, or at least sounds. But here it is through a dance. When they were preparing the Meditations on Savitri paintings, when they came to this passage, Mother did not, as she usually did, she didn't give a sketch. She stood up and took a dancing pose. And so this priestess, she is inspired and ruled from truth's revealing vault. There's a cave, but from the vault, from the roof of that cave, comes true inspirations, no? And the movements of her dance are ruled by those true inspirations. So this is a prophet cavern of the gods. It's where one can learn something about the future. And what is dancing is the heart. Savitri's heart. It's dancing, it's doing a rhythmic dance, a heart of silence, and it's held in the hands of joy. That heart is inhabiting with its rich creative beats. Those truth inspirations have a creative effect, no? It's inhabiting Savitri's body, a body which is like a parable of dawn. A parable is a little story which sums up some deep truth, no? Of dawn. We've been reading about the dawn, what the dawn means. No? Her body is like that beautiful message that comes with the dawn goddess. And he says that body seems like a niche, a little place we have in the wall where we keep the image of a deity, no? A niche for veiled divinity. The body is the niche. The divinity is within it, hiding, veiled, no? Or the body, image he gives for it is a golden temple door, a door that hasn't been opened yet. It's a door to things beyond. So when she moves, this lovely body like a parable of dawn, the rhythms are immortal rhythm, even though this is a mortal body, she's here in time, her movements are born of time. There's some immortal rhythm there. And the way that she looks at people and the world around her, and especially her smile, awoke celestial sense even in earth stuff. So that even the substance of the bodies and the consciousness of human beings woke up to heavenly sensitivity. There, so the intense delight of seeing her look and her smile poured a supernal beauty on men's lives, on the human lives here. A divine beauty was poured. I'm sure that this whole passage is Sri Aurobindo's description of the mother. Patricia? Thank you. Oh, he's evoked her spirit, her will, her mind, her heart, her body, and now he speaks about her nature, with all its generosity. A wide self-giving was her native act. It's just spontaneous to her to generously spread everything that she is and has. Magnanimity, it's the wide generosity, like he says, of sea or sky. It's something unlimited, powerful. And that generosity of Savitri's nature, enveloped, embraced with its greatness, everything that comes to her and gives to everyone and everything that comes in contact with it, the sense that the world itself has been greatened in its meaning and significance. She can be very gentle. Her kindly care was a sweet, temperate sun, like the spring sun that we feel so happy to step out into after the cold winter. No? But she's also capable of passion, of intensity. Sri Aurobindo repeatedly mentions it. No? But he says that passion, there's nothing wild or chaotic about it. It's like that wonderful balance of the blue sky, perfectly equal and undisturbed. And then there's this beautiful image of the soul. Like a hunted bird, the soul coming in contact with Savitri feels that it's escaping. It's been suffering, struggling in a world of storms, but now it's escaped. It's reached a quiet place that's like a remembered breast. The bird must remember its mother. So that's a safe place, a haven of safety. But there's also this splendid, soft repose when the little bird comes back to its mother's breast. And there it can drink life back in streams of honey fire, recover the lost habit of happiness. Again, I think of Sri Aurobindo, that he had been going through so much discipline and intense effort and tapasya. When mother came, he might have recovered the lost habit of happiness in her bright nature's glorious ambience, in this beautiful atmosphere. And there the little bird can preen itself. You know, birds do this if they've been in a storm. They smooth down their feathers and look and see how beautiful they are. Preen joy in her warmth and colors rule. Hmm.
Sharon, do you ever express his love for mother openly? he described her, he explained was who she was, but he ever explained his love for her?
I don't know anything about that. I only remember in this context Nirodh Baran speaking to us once long ago. He used to come sometimes from the ashram to the Matrimandir workers' camp on Sunday afternoons. And I remember being very, very moved when he spoke about the relationship of mother and Sri Aurobindo. He said, it was like on each side a complete surrender to the other. If mother asked or told anything, he would just do it. And similarly, she. That was what he had seen of their relationship and their daily interchange. And only once, I think perhaps I've read this in the agenda, mother mentions there, she was coming and going in his room. No, she had her own work to do. And once he asked her, do you have to go? Sorry. She mentioned it as a very special experience of hers.
Mm. The more descriptions from what is said, but where you can feel the surrender, like we would wait for hours and days.
Yes. Postpone his meals. He wouldn't eat until she came to feed him. Yes. Beautiful descriptions in Nirodh Baran's book, 12 Years with Sri Aurobindo. Because he was able to observe some of these things, intimate moments. Yeah, this is it. Yes. Yes. So it continues. Who would be next? All right, Josie. Yes.
A deeper compassion, a hushed sanctuary, her inward help unbared. A gate in heaven. Love in her was wider than the universe. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart. The great, unsatisfied Godhead here could dwell, vacant of the dwarf self's imprisoned air. Her moon could harbor his slender,
sublime.
Oh, thank you. Spiritual that can make all things divine. Or even her gulfs were secrecies of light. At once, she was the stillness and the word, a continent of self-diffusing peace, an ocean of untrembling virgin fire. The strength, the silence of the gods were hers. In her, he found a vastness like his home. His high, warm, subtle ether, he refound, and moved in her as in his natural home. In her, he met his own eternity.
So this is why Savitri is the perfect shrine for love. That great, unsatisfied Godhead could dwell in her. Because her whole being is vacant, completely free from the limited, imprisoned atmosphere of the dwarf self of the ego. Her mood is able to harbor, to contain the breath of love, spiritual love, that can make all things divine. Because even her gulfs, the deeper parts of her being, were secrecies of light, full of light, even though secret and hidden. She combines the stillness and the word, the creative dynamism. Her nature is a continent, something solid and permanent, a continent of self-diffusing peace, spreading peace everywhere, and at the same time an ocean, untrembling, virgin, fire, pure energy. The strength, the silence of the gods were her. In her, he found a vastness like his own. His high, warm, subtle ether, his original atmosphere, he found again, and he can move in her as in his natural home. In her, he met his own eternity. Yes.
Spiritual and divine, both the words in the same language, please.
No, the word spiritual here describes love, the sublime breath of love. So there are many levels of love, no? But the sublime breath of love is spiritual love. And it's spiritual love that can make all things divine. Has the transforming power. You don't look satisfied with my explanation. Yes, yes. But spiritual is an adjective here describing love, the breath of love. There's many levels of love, physical love, mental love, vital love, maternal love, many, many different kinds. Love can express himself through all those, but in Savitri, he's able to find something very rare, the capacity to harbor spiritual love. That has the capacity to transform things from human to divine. Yes, love is normally masculine, no? We see him as a little Cupid with his bow and arrow, no? The god of, but of course there's also the goddess of love, that's true. But she's the goddess who inspires love. He's the god who puts love into you. And I think in the Indian tradition,
yes,
he's Kama, no?
Kamadev.
He's a boy.
Yeah, his boy.
Yeah.
What is the name in Indian?
Kama.
Kamadev. Dev means God. Kamadev.
But Kama is lust, isn't it?
Sorry.
Well, that's one of the expressions. be very interesting as we go through the poem to see the many different ways in which Sri Aurobindo characterizes love. There are many, many different expressions.
Maybe it's just for me, the love of the shape is something beautiful.
That women are particularly able to give love. Well, of course, in this poem, Savitri is representing love. But he's explained how. This is where he explains how Savitri is able to carry that spiritual love, which is able to, makes her able to fulfill her mission. Otherwise, she wouldn't have been able to do it. Yes, Amal.
I can't quite understand color's role in the previous line.
In color.
The color's rule.
Yes. Her warmth and color's rule. The bird has been in a world of storms, a gray and windy, cold world. No? And now he's come to a safe place. And perhaps the breast of his mother bird is beautifully colored and warm. And he says glorious. No, it's a glorious ambience. It's so different from that gray world of storm.
Prem.
Come.
Is desire. Kam is closer to desire. It is not desire. It is desire. And prem is love.
Thank you.
But he talks about
Yeah,
yes, that makes us think of Cupid with his arrow.
But mm-hmm. You've seen in Indian tradition that
Indian
tradition. Yeah, there's no prem there, there is no that word is there. If you see there, there is written come there. With the
Krishna is
Krishna is
that,
also
but,
yeah, the God who inspires
God. Work, so he has the work to do some.
Anyway, here it is he. It's very clear, no?
Because in Indian tradition also the Divine Mother, she is the love.
Yes, of course. And here if we take this as the meeting of the Mother and the Lord.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm.
I'm in the same line.
Yes. Yes, there's again, it's expressed very, very beautifully. I think it's in the book 10, canto 3, the debate of love and death, where Savitri explains to death that our human love, all our human, imperfect human forms of love, are preparing the soul to be able to experience divine love. And Mother and Sri Aurobindo also insisted on this, no? They said, don't dry up your heart. No? So, love is love. There's also a very special explanation at the end of Canto 2 of Book 5 relating to the meeting of Savitri and Satyavan. Love is a divine power. It can't always express itself divinely in human beings, in our limited nature, at our present stage of evolution. So he says, the warm, inadequate signs that love must use. Yes. The dwarf self. Well, of course, we have a vaster self as well. But most of us are still ruled by our little self, our dwarf self. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then this, he in this line, in her he found the vastness, that he, the person that dwarfs him.
That refers to love. Love is naturally vast, wants union with everything. No?
Mm.
But the dwarf self is... wants to hold things for itself, is only capable of very limited expression. So her nature is vacant of all that littleness and selfishness. Mm. So she can express all kinds of love, spiritual love as well. So we can continue with the next section. Who's hiding there? Slava. Would you read Slava? At the break on page 16. Yes, let's look at this sentence. Now we have started on this new cycle of reading, and we started in the Thursday class at about the same time. So we're reading more or less simultaneously these passages. And I'm so much impressed by the amazing quality of Sri Aurobindo's poetry in these two cantos. Now we've been through the whole poem not so long ago in both the classes. I'm feeling that these two cantos are unique in this, in the way that he has compressed so much meaning into each sentence, so much suggestion. So here, this is just a sentence of 10 lines or less, so much in it. Till then, till that moment when love in the wilderness met savagery, no mournful line had barred this ray. Savitri is a ray of light and love. And until that moment when love met her in the forest, she's not experienced any sorrow. No mournful line has barred this ray. And he tells us that ever since she opens her eyes in the human form, on the frail breast of this precarious earth, this earth of ours where everything is threatened and dangerous and unreliable, things can break easily. Her orbed sight, her physical sight that's using these eyeballs, no? Her sight in this breath-fastened house. Sri Aurobindo often refers to our physical body as the house that's inhabited by our consciousness. No? So here is her power of sight using her physical eyes in this house that is held together by the breath, by the prana. Her eyes as a child, as a baby, when she first opened her eyes, they opened in sympathy with happier stars, not this sun that we know, with other worlds, no? Where life is not exposed to sorrowful change as it is here. No? So opening her eyes and remembering the beauty of those other worlds, those are happier stars. She remembered beauty which our eyes don't know anything about. Our death-claimed lids, the eyelids. Our eyelids are physical. They've been born. They're going to die. They don't know anything about the beauty of those worlds that Savitri has come from. And when she wakes up for the first time in a human body and uses these physical eyes, she's wondering. She's full of amazement. We see this in babies, no? They look. They have a special look. So she too had it. Wondered at this world, so different from those other worlds. This world of fragile, breakable forms that are not even real. It's as if they are just painted on canvas strips of shimmering time, like scenery in a theater, you know. It's just painted, these fragile forms. They don't have any lasting reality. Since then, since she first opened her eyes, the impunity of unborn minds was hers. Powers which don't have to be born and don't have to die, of immortal beings. She has that impunity, invulnerability, that immunity to attack and to sorrow. That is why no sorrowful line has barred this ray. Until that moment, who's next to read? Is it Alice? Tomiko?
Although she learned to be a human woman,
reflected heaven's future joy. Almost a soul who lived within her life, the playmate in
sempiternal. Thank you. Although Savitri has leaned down, stooped down to bear, to pick up the human load, the load of fate and ignorance, in her movements she's still keeping the measures of the gods. She hasn't restricted her movements at all. And the breath of earth, of the material principle, earth's material atmosphere, hadn't stained the brilliant glass, the mirror, which is her consciousness. Or maybe it is a window, a glass window, which allows the divine consciousness to pass through. That glass has not got smeared, made dusty and dirty with the dust of our mortal atmosphere. It's still reflecting the divine bliss, heaven's spiritual joy. So the people who live close to her, those who lived within her light, they could almost see her playmate, her companion, who has followed her when she came down from those worlds of happier stars, of those sempiternal spheres. Eternal, we know, no? Timeless, without beginning and end. Sempi is from the Latin semper, which means always. So it's an intensification, sempiternal sphere. Her playmate has descended with Savitri. It's come down from those realms where it belongs, that are unattainable to us. It's come down in Savitri's wake. As she came down, there's a power of attraction which has called the bird down, attracting Advent's luminous wake. The Advent is the coming, huh? And we see a wake when behind a ship that's moving fast. So fish and birds will follow in the wake of the boat. So as Savitri descended from those sempiternal spheres, this white fire dragon bird of endless bliss, who was her companion, her playmate, in those worlds that she's come from, is still drifting with burning wings above her days. Dragon fire, no? There's something intense and brilliant, but it's a white fire, pure and protective. He is protecting her. Heaven's tranquil shield, it's a protection, guarded the missioned child. So her early term, the early part of her life, was like a glowing orbit, a wonderful circling golden light. And the years, each year, he says, were like gold raiment of the gods that pass. Each year was like a passing god in golden clothing. Her youth sat throned in calm felicity as she grew up. So she's a a true princess.
Mm. It's interesting that the mother, when she was young and a child, then had these teachers coming.
Yes.
To her, and one she's calling Krishna.
Yes.
So it seems in a way.
Yes.
She even had two angels on her two sides when she was falling.
So they picked her, they held her up, yes. Yes. So she was protected. Although in some ways she had quite a difficult childhood. She already in her childhood she had to face many things that were contradictions of her inner nature. Through that she grew strong. No? Here he seems to speak of it as a representative of divine bliss, this playmate of hers from those spheres, who comes with her and stays with her in her human life to protect her. I don't want to put any other labels. Of course, bliss is the characteristic of the soul, the innermost being. I think we'll stop there today. Just before you play the music and we hear Mother's voice, I'm happy to announce. Yesterday we got the first copies. This is the revised edition of Volume 1 of The English of Savitri. It very quickly went out of print. We had to reprint, and so we took the opportunity to make some revisions and changes. So that's now available.
Yeah. Divine and bent have repeating the marvel of the first to the second, changing so much around. Love came to her, hiding the shadow. Where might he find in her his perfect sight? All in her pointed to a nobler kind, near to earth's wide net, intimate with heaven, exalted and sweet. Her young, large, visioned spirit voyaging through worlds of splendor and of calm, overflew the ways of thought to unborn sin. Ardent was her unstumbling will, her mind a sea of white sincerity, passionate inflow had not won her victory. All in her pointed to a nobler kind.
Now we've got a repetition.
Near to earth's white net, in.
Sorry.
And in a mystic and dynamic dance, a priestess of immaculate ecstasy, inspired and who. From truth's revealing vault, moves in some prophet's heaven of the God, her heart a silence in the hands of joy, inhabited with rich creative. A body splendid soul. One could drink life back in streams of Panipa, recover the lost habit of happiness, feel her bright nature's glorious engine, and clean joy in her warmth and colors. Almost they saw who lived within her life, her playmate in the sempiternal sphere, descended from its unattainable reeds in her attracting advanced luminous way. The white far dragon bird of endless bliss, drifting with burning wings above her day, heaven tranquil field guarded the mission site.
Thanks to Shabindo.